Thanks for being with us here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin health officials are reporting another jump in the number of positive COVID-19 tests. Milwaukee County has the most cases, followed by Dane. And the number of deaths in Wisconsin caused by COVID-19 stands at 10. We have Wisconsin's chief medical officer here to discuss the state's attempt to flatten the curve, the goal being to avoid a sharp uptick of cases and instead elongate the outbreak so hospitals can keep up. Have you been tested? What was your experience? Are you supportive of the stay-at-home order? What additional actions do you think the state and federal officials should take right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Ryan Westergaard is chief medical officer and state epidemiologist for communicable diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Dr. Westergaard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for inviting me back.
Let's first look at testing. Some healthcare facilities were initially unable to test for COVID-19 due to a lack of tests. What now is our capacity here in Wisconsin?
Well, fortunately, our capacity has increased quite a bit just in the past week. So we at the Department of Health Services do surveillance on an ongoing basis. So all test results that get reported to clinicians also come to our system electronically. And as of this week, we're receiving about 2,000 test results a day, and we've received lab reports from about 40 different laboratories in the state, and that's an increase from just two a little over a week ago when our public health labs were able to use the CDC test. So test capacity is increasing.
We heard from a doctor in Eau Claire yesterday saying that it was taking a week to get test results back. Is there a lag time? What are the delays for getting results?
Yeah, with getting tests right now, because it's a specialized test that can only be done in certain laboratories, does involve a turnaround time of a couple days at the minimum. And that's because specimens need to get transported, sometimes overnight, and then the machinery that's running these tests it takes a long time, and there's a multi-step process. So the minimum turnaround time of 1 or 2 days is under the best circumstances. And in the setting of the last week where there was a limited number of labs and the capacity is still being built up, we were forced to prioritize testing for patients for whom the information was really urgently needed. And that turned out to be hospitalized patients and healthcare workers who were on the front lines. So at our two public health laboratories, we developed some priorities that resulted in some of patients who are recovering at home or have mild symptoms being less, lower in the queue, and then there was a longer turnaround time. We're hoping that issue takes care of itself as technology improves, as manufacturing of test reagents improves. But because of the nationwide crisis, there's a shortage of all sorts of different necessary equipment and ingredients for these tests. So we're vulnerable for having these delays going forward. But right now, we think the test capacity is increasing, and we're optimistic that it'll continue that way.
And Wisconsin has a new testing task force. What does that entail?
Well, the goal ultimately is to have the lowest barrier, the lowest threshold for testing in as many settings as we can. And at the very beginning, it was just in these highly sophisticated tests. But as technology improves, we're going to be able to do it as point-of-care tests. As some people might be familiar with getting a test for the flu or for strep throat in the office testing, and also in untraditional venues. There's been wide attention to non-traditional testing venues in places like South Korea, where people can drive up and get tested. So at the State Emergency Operations Center, they've created a task force to really take inventory of all the various strategies that we can be using to get people tested who need testing, do so in a coordinated fashion, so we don't have the shortages that we've been struggling with in the first month of the epidemic.
Talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. You can join in. Healthcare workers, what do you need right now? Has your facility seen an increase in volume? How are you preparing to combat the pandemic? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Westergaard, the stay-at-home order went into effect midweek. Are you seeing any positive results from that so far, or when would that kick in?
Yeah, it's a great question. We're cautiously optimistic, but we're also trying to communicate a sense of calm urgency to the public that if this works, we really need to all chip in and all participate in the stay-at-home order. So One of the concerning things about this epidemic that we've learned from other countries is that by the time we've detected it in a community, it's probably much more widespread than we realized. And this is because of the likelihood that people can have the virus and spread the virus with minimal symptoms. Now, for some people, it's a very lethal virus, and it's not always predictable who those individuals are. So when we test really the tip of the iceberg in terms of having hospitalized and sick people tested, it's often the case that there's a number of other people with minimal symptoms in the community already. That was really the early experience with this tragic situation in Washington State that affected a lot of people in long-term care facilities. So the idea of staying at home is to decrease overall on a large scale the close contact between people so the virus doesn't get a chance to spread through the community from people who have mild symptoms and really exponentially increase and really spread throughout the community. So that's in order for us to do that, it really takes large buy-in. In terms of when we would see the effect, right now, if we implemented that 100% or 90% effective in terms of reducing close contact, I would still expect we're going to see a peak in the coming weeks. And that's because people think can become infected and they're not develop symptoms for a period of 5 days to as many as 2 weeks. So even if we really implemented it well, we might still see them go up, and we expect to see the numbers of cases, the number of deaths go up. But our hope is that we'll reach that peak sooner, and the peak will be slower and lower than if we allowed business as usual and the normal amount of contact with people.
You probably saw this week the State Hospital Association put out some modeling estimates that the number of patients needing care will exceed our hospital capacity in 3 to 5 weeks. What can be done to increase capacity? What do you think of those estimates?
Well, the estimates are subject to a lot of limitations, and forecasting things like infectious disease epidemics is even more fraught with challenges than forecasting things like the weather, because one of the key parameters is human behavior, which is very difficult to predict. So we've looked at a number of diverse computer modeling strategies try to answer this question of what is the peak going to be, how many hospitalized or critically ill patients is going to be. And unfortunately, they're all telling us the same thing, which is that the capacity for hospital space and critical care beds is likely to be exceeded. So there's two things that we do for this. One is we're trying to grow capacity however we can. Most of our health systems have started to do this surge capacity where they've eliminated outpatient scheduled procedure, which normally use hospital rooms and ventilators so they can increase the capacity. We're looking at building additional facilities to care for people who have critical illness. We're looking to buy additional ventilators, though that's a challenge because this is a nationwide epidemic. But the other thing that I think we can't emphasize enough, that the peak, the degree to which these computer models predict reality, the key driver of this is how well we limit social interaction. That's how the virus gets amplified or magnified in the community. It's through close contact between people. So if we can all do that, if we can, for this next critical month, limit how frequently people are in the same space, breathing the same air, and pay attention to all the standard things like respiratory hygiene and close contact and hand washing when we are in public, we're going to minimize this surge and protect our healthcare resources.
We're talking about Wisconsin's approach to battling the coronavirus with the state epidemiologist for communicable diseases. Ryan Westergaard is here. Have you or a loved one contracted the coronavirus? Have you had to navigate the healthcare system? We want to hear from you. What's your experience been like? What are your questions about COVID-19 here in Wisconsin? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in just a minute with Dr. Westergaard right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So the Wisconsin Hospital Association took stock. The state has 11,000 hospital beds, 2,600 ICU beds, and about 620 ventilators. Infrastructure here that is absolutely crucial when combating a virus that currently lacks preventative treatment. So healthcare workers, what do you need right now? How is your facility seeing an increase in volume? How are you preparing for the pandemic? Do you have adequate supplies? Tell us what you're seeing, 800-642-1234. Dr. Ryan Westergaard is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Department of Health Services, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Dave is with us from Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hello. I work in a warehouse where we drive forklifts. We're doing laps down the aisles constantly for 8 hours. So the person in front of us is, we're breathing the jet stream from the person in front of us and vice versa in the person behind us. I was wondering if that was a risk to contract the virus.
Dave, are you wearing any protective clothing or gear as you work?
Nope. Just normal, you know, just, no, I'm not. None of us are.
Dr. Westergaard?
Yeah. Thanks, Dave, for that question. The risk of transmitting the virus is really requires the greatest risk is close contact, and we define that as between 6 feet. And the reason for that is the virus is most heavily concentrated in respiratory droplets, the kind of things that get generated when you cough and sneeze. So if you're in the same room with someone and further away from them at 6 feet, the risk is minimal. When you're sharing the same indoor environment, the risk of transmitting the virus through contaminated surfaces is also a concern, though. So that's the reason that we recommend hand hygiene and keeping frequently touched surfaces like doorknobs and tabletops clean as well. So to specifically answer your question, you know, breathing the same air in the situation you described would be a pretty minimal risk, but getting within close contact within 6 feet or, you know, two arm's length away is really what we define as close contact that puts you at risk of transmitting respiratory viruses.
Dave, thank you for the call. We heard from Mike in La Crosse, called in and wanted to say the state should be releasing how many tests are conducted so the public could better understand the rate of positive tests. Dr. Westergaard, does the state release these kind of numbers?
Yes, we do. So on our website at 2 p.m. every day, we update the number of tests that have been done that are both positive and negative. And so we can see, you can see the total volume of tests that has increased day by day. And so we've been reporting those numbers as we go.
And the volume right now, I mean, the number of tests that have been done exceeds about 10,000 the last I checked.
Yeah, that's true. The number of labs able to do tests is also going up. So, We're cautiously optimistic that with more technology coming online, we'll be able to keep up with the demand. And right now, there's not rationing per se. Any clinician who feels like their patient needs a test can order a test and have it done. We've had to prioritize testing in hospitalized patients at our public health labs that do fee exempt testing. But hopefully, we'll use a number of different strategies to get tests done more efficiently than we have been able to in the past.
Looking to Congress now, which is on the cusp of passing the $2 trillion stimulus package, and it includes $100 billion for hospitals, what might that mean for Wisconsin's healthcare system?
Well, there are critical shortages, as everyone is aware, of certain supplies, most notably personal protective equipment like masks, gowns, and gloves, which are really our mainstay of preventing transmission of respiratory viruses that are spread in the way that I described. So that infrastructure is really valuable. We're doing everything we can to prevent the need for this, but other critical care resources like mechanical ventilators and the equipment that goes along with supporting people on life support when their lungs are severely damaged are also things that we want to increase our capacity. Having funds to purchase those things would be helpful, but there is a nationwide shortage. So we're hoping that the federal resources can also stimulate other improvements in manufacturing sector to improve the supply of these critical resources.
So when you mentioned PPE there, as it stands today, do our Wisconsin hospitals have the supplies they need to combat the pandemic as we see it?
Well, as we speak, we hear from individual hospitals, they are in a contingency situation where many are using PPE like masks in ways that they don't normally do, meaning wearing masks for longer periods of time, not taking a new one on when you go into a patient room and then throwing it out when you leave and using another one for the next patient's room. So if that's done well, if people don't touch their masks, we have guidance about how to make PPE last longer. And many, if not most, hospitals are in that space right now where they're trying to conserve PPE by doing things that we think are equivalently safe, but not sort of usual behavior. What we're keeping a close eye on and what we're trying to get hospitals to keep staying in communication with us about is when do we actually get to sort of crisis levels where we have to do things that really aren't standard. And that tends to look like using non-standard masks, homemade PPE, things that we're reading about. We are not in a position where we're doing those non-traditional things that we think are less safe, but we're actively preparing and trying to prevent getting to that situation.
Are masks being reused by the same healthcare provider, the same physician or nurse during the day where you take the mask off and it gets sterilized?
So there are strategies for sterilizing masks after you've been wearing them for a period of time. Yes, the same mask can be worn longer throughout the day as long as it doesn't get visibly soiled or contaminated with your hands. So there's some best practices about using masks for a longer period of time than we normally do. Some hospitals, not hasn't been universally adopted, are using ultraviolet light to sterilize masks, wiping down face shields, which are important for preventing respiratory droplets from getting in your eyes with alcohol. So we're doing things that we think are safe that can make the PPE last longer right now and feel comfortable that it hasn't come at a cost to patient safety, but that's really the concern and why we're trying to really work on both sides, both the supply chain, trying where are we going to get extra PPE, and also the demand, which is to say, how can we use the PPE most wisely so we prevent getting into those crisis situations.
What about the status of ventilators in the state?
Well, as you mentioned, the Hospital Association and we at the Department of Health Services have queried the hospitals about the number of ventilators and the potential surge capacity, and we're trying to also do work on both ends of the equation. So, using ventilators only in crisis, so we're postponing or canceling elective procedures, turning outpatient ambulatory procedure rooms into making those available for addressing caring for critical care patients. But also trying to be proactive about if we get to the situation where we have to make hard decisions about using ventilators or not using ventilators in places that we usually would, what's the best ethical framework for doing that? We really hope that we don't get there. The experience from New York is that they're very close to being there right now. So it's a very grave concern that the usual standard of anyone who has respiratory failure in the ICU gets a trial of a ventilator, we may get to a point where we have to do things differently. We may have to make decisions and involve other strategies for saying what's the best use of these ventilators so we can make them, put them to the wisest use to save the most people. And those are very hard discussions, and that's really a motivation for all of the prevention and the surge capacity things that we're doing so we don't have to make those hard decisions.
Talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Health Services here in Wisconsin. Russ in Stoughton. Hi, Russ.
Quick comment here. I've had the opportunity to talk to at least three different people in the last week or so who have had either friends or relatives with symptoms, the fever, the sore throat, the cough, go to various medical clinics, I don't know which ones, and were turned away actually by receptionists, not even a doctor or nurse, saying go home and take the best care of yourself you can because we don't have any tests.
Dr. Westergaard, what do you do if you are recognizing some symptoms?
The best thing to do is to call your doctor, your healthcare provider, and get advice. Most cases of COVID-19, like we talked about before, aren't going to require medical attention. And that's, you know, that's the good news, is that the majority of people can recover at home. And right now in our whole community-wide response to the epidemic, our recommendation is for everyone to stay out of contact and stay home as much as you can if it's safe. So people that have mild symptoms that don't require hospitalization, as long as they know how to get help and they know what warning signs to look for, which would be like if they get short of, increasingly short of breath or feel really uncomfortable or lightheadedness, you call 911 by all means, seek care urgently if it's a life-threatening situation. But for the typical respiratory virus that infection that everyone gets a couple times a year, runny nose, sore throat, body aches, if those symptoms are mild, the safest thing to do is recover at home and know who to call if they get worse. And
well,
we want to test more than we are, so we can understand where the epidemic is spreading. But right now, we really want to protect both patients and healthcare workers. The majority of patients we think can be cared for in the home setting should be cared for in the home setting.
Dr. Westergaard, thank you. Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The U.S. now has more confirmed cases of the coronavirus than any other country. Nationwide, the number of infections tops 85,000. At least 1,300 people have died from the virus. New York City remains the hardest hit area. NPR's Rob Stein says not enough testing's been done to get a true picture of how the virus has spread.
500,000 tests is still just a drop in the bucket in terms of what a huge nation like the U.S. really needs. And giving places a false sense of security could be dangerous. It could be kind of just setting the stage for them to become the next New York.
Next week, President Trump is expected to issue updated guidelines for social distancing. The U.S. Navy hospital ship Mercy is heading from San Diego to Los Angeles to help ease California's stressed healthcare system. As Hedy Lynn Hurdes reports, the Mercy will be used for surgeries and other critical care not related to COVID-19.
The 1,000-bed ship is expected to be a relief valve for local hospitals in Los Angeles that are currently swamped with both coronavirus and non-coronavirus cases. The California Health and Human Services Secretary says California, which has reported more than 3,000 cases and 67 deaths related to COVID-19, is expecting a large surge in patients over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
The Navy hospital ship Comfort will head to New York. This is NPR News from Washington.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 8:31. I'm Melissa Ingalls. With more testing available, the number of positive cases of COVID-19 in the state continues to grow. The State Department of Health Services announced Thursday there are 707 positive cases of COVID-19 statewide, as well as 11,583 negative tests. As of this morning, 12 people had died due to COVID-19. The latest data from the Department of Health Services show for every person who has tested positive for the new coronavirus in Wisconsin so far, 16 have tested negative. Megan Hart reports that healthcare professionals are expecting that ratio to change in the coming days.
Dr. Jeff Potthoff is Chief Quality Officer at UW Health. Currently, he says the sickest patients are prioritized when it comes to testing. Potthoff says healthcare workers and people in high-risk groups like those with heart or lung disease can also be tested with milder symptoms under the state's current guidelines. He says the ratio of positive to negative tests will increase as the virus continues to spread in Wisconsin.
And then as we get more into it here in Wisconsin, you'll see the percentage of tests that are positive will be greater as a function of the whole number of people we've tested.
Potthoff says the COVID-19 test is highly accurate and false negatives are unlikely, but he says they are possible in people who are asymptomatic. He noted asymptomatic individuals are not being tested in Wisconsin. Megan Hart, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Under the stay-at-home order issued by the Evers administration this week, healthcare workers, including dentists, are considered essential, but the American Dental Association and the Wisconsin Dental Association recommend dentists suspend all non-emergency procedures. Dr. Patrick Teep is the immediate past president of the WDA. He says suspending services keeps patients and staff safe from COVID-19. Still, Teep says it has been difficult to turn patients away.
During normal times, we caution patients all the time to don't defer treatment because treatment can get worse, you know, tooth decay or periodontal disease. And so that is difficult. But these are different times than what we've ever experienced before.
The WDA says it will continue to encourage dentists to limit care to emergencies through at least April 24th. You're listening to news from Wisconsin Public Radio. You can get more news at any time by going to our website. That's WPR.org. It's 8:34 now.